Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
It is Tuesday, the 19th of April, 2022. Hello and welcome to Africa of the Future. You're listening to Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. This is a program aimed at interrogating how this glorious continent is faring in achieving the objectives set out in the AU's Agenda 2063. My name is Luyanda Maume, and I'm your host. We have a great show lined up for you today. Remember, you can find us online on www.channelafrica.co.za, on channel 802 on the DSTV audio bouquet. You can also find us on channel 628 on OpenView. If you want to keep in touch with us, you can do so via WhatsApp. It's +27 63 406 9126. On Twitter, it's at Channel Africa 1.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Today on the show, we bring you a second installment of the conversation about a report on the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. And this time we speak to one of the Tigrayans to document their experience of the conflict, the response from the international community, and how it is reported in the media. But before we get there, let's take you across the continent to remind you of stories you may have missed. Opposition politicians in Rwanda have criticized its agreement to accept thousands of unauthorized asylum seekers flown from the United Kingdom, saying wealthy Western countries should own up to international obligations on the migration issue. Under a £120 million British pound agreement with Kigali, economic migrants arriving in the UK illegally will be refused asylum and detained in a former military base before being flown directly to Rwanda. Listen to the managing editor of the New Times newspaper in Rwanda, James Munyaneza.
This was after, as we were told, more than 9 months of negotiations, of talks between the two governments, that's in Rwanda and UK. And the thinking from what has been told by government here is that Rwanda, of course, has had a very turbulent, very tragic history, a history that has been marked by mass exodus, after mass exodus, episodes of people fleeing Rwanda, and persecution, of course, they culminating to the genocide, and that led into another exodus of refugees from Rwanda. So Rwanda has for a long time, you know, Rwanda understand what being a refugee, what being somebody without a home, a stateless person means, and that is one aspect. Number two is that Rwanda is also home to more than 130,000 refugees from especially this region, Burundi, Congo and other places. And also it has been receiving the asylum seekers under a different program, a multilateral program, asylum seekers and migrants from Libya.
Malawi has signed a Child, Youth and Climate Action Protocol with UNICEF to facilitate inclusion of children and youth in climate change programs. Malawi says it decided to commit to the UNICEF declaration so to set the pace for all SADC countries. Listen to Malawi's Minister of Natural Resources and Climate Change, Eisenhower Mkaka.
Realizing the fact that in this fight against climate change, no country is an island, and we need to make sure that our efforts, our actions are coordinated if we are to combat or defeat climate change and combat the effects of climate change.
And finally, the world's marine environment is in danger due to plastic waste, and too few consumers are aware of the need to recycle plastic or the benefits of doing so. Millions of animals are killed by plastic every year, and from birds to fish to other marine organisms, and the most of the deaths are due to entanglement and starvation. Humans are not immune to the plastic threat, as microplastics have been found in the seafood destined for consumption. Listen to Olofunto Porofise. She is the CEO of the Chanja Dati Limited, one of Nigeria's leading waste collection and recycling social enterprises.
So we collect all those different types of plastics, and what we do with them is we sort by color, we sort by type, we sort by usage as well. So depending on what the end customer requires is what we end up processing the plastic waste to. And our off-takers actually use them in the household sector because they're being turned into bottles for soda, turned into fiber for clothing and for duvets, your buckets, your bowls, your waste bins, the like. The waste pickers are the unsung hero of the waste management sector because they're willing to go wherever, however far, to sort and collect waste that they feel has value. The waste pickers definitely help our collection rates, and they are a very, very, very important part of the circular economy and recycling and waste management sector, especially on the African continent.
And those are some of the stories you may have missed across the continent, and we'll take a short break, and on the other side of that we speak to our guest. Stay tuned to Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. This is Africa of the Future. My name is Luyanda Maume. Thank you so much for joining us. We're back after this.
In the quest to find meaning from the ancient cosmic knowledge and meta-science, its connection with the knowledge capital, shaping the African mind. We explore the uncharted African brain, from the Dagon people to the Zulus, from the Maasai to the Yoruba people. Join Sir Max, a knowledge premier, every Friday, 8 a.m. Central African Time, as he trots the continent to assemble Africa's top minds. From political to corporate and spiritual leaders, from scholars to rebels, from cutting-edge literature to disruptors, from scientists to athletes, Masterclass Africa is about leadership, indigenous wisdom dissemination, and consciousness that must drive the agenda of the African continent and the diaspora. Masterclass Africa, a show not to be missed. Only on Channel Africa Radio.
Africa of the future.
Africa of the future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views and interviews from an African perspective. Now, last week we spoke to Human Rights Watch about a report detailing atrocities that are being committed in Ethiopia's Tigray region. To remind us of the content of that conversation, I spoke to the organization's Leticia Bader, and I started by asking her to outline their key findings.
So the report looks at 16 months of widespread abuses in the western Tigray zone, which is an area of Tigray which borders both the Amhara region in Ethiopia, but also Eritrea and Sudan. And we document waves of abuses, starting with a campaign by federal government forces alongside Amhara regional forces and militia in the area where war crimes were committed against civilians. And then we look at and document what was and has continued to be an organized campaign of ethnic cleansing against Tigrayans in that area. And as part of that campaign, there have been a whole series of abuses which we document. Extrajudicial killings, widespread sexual violence, coercive displacements of the population. So from December 2020 onwards, what we saw were Tigrayans were being forcibly expulsed from this area by Amhara regional forces, some of them directly from centers of detention where they've been held in horrific conditions, and others as a result of coercive environment they were facing, including increasing restrictions on their movement, ability to speak Tigrinya, access to humanitarian services. There were very little assistance that were going into this region. So what was going in was discriminately denied to the Tigrayan population. And as a result of this campaign of ethnic cleansing, what we saw were hundreds of thousands of Tigrayans that were being forced to leave Western Tigray and then end up in other parts of Tigray. And so what we find is that the abuses of part of this campaign constitute crimes against humanity.
That is Human Rights Watch's Leticia Bader joining me on the line last week. And subsequent to this conversation, I got a lot of messages from Tigrayans requesting a right to be heard on this. And on the line, we are joined by Zima. Welcome to Africa of the Future.
Thank you.
Now, I would imagine this is a very difficult conversation for you to have, but perhaps we can begin by us getting your response to that joint report issued by the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International on the conflict in Tigray.
As you might tell by the looks of it, this is just a fraction of what has been happening in Tigray since November 2020. And it's really so sad that a human being would do such a horrific thing to a neighbor that they used to live together in harmony. And it hurts my gut when it is, especially to the place where I came from originally.
Perhaps, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, because I would imagine some of us and some of our listeners, they only got to know about the war when it started. Take us through the background and the genesis of the entire story, as it were.
The actual conflict started in November 4, 2020, but there was a blockade of a border between the Amhara and Tigray region. So for about 2-3 years prior to the actual conflict started, there wasn't any passage that goes through the Amhara region to Tigray, which connects to the capital. So the people of Tigray have been in isolation for about more than 3-4 years. The federal government haven't done nothing to prevent it. In fact, it was preparing for more destruction that led us to the current situation. And for me and for many Tigrayans who live in diaspora, it's been more than 17 months now since we've heard from our families, because one thing the Ethiopian government did on the, when it started the conflict was to shut telecommunications, internet, banking, and all that basic communications aspect in this day and age. And it's so worrying. Even we feel we have the blessing of God to even walk alive wherever we are, regardless of the problems, knowing our loved ones, our immediate family, are in danger or may not even be alive. And when the war started, we couldn't hear anything from inside. As I said, the communication was cut off. And what makes it worse was it was involvement of foreign countries such as Eritrea, Turkey, Emirates, China, Russia, and just for one region. I still can't process it, or any human being with the right mindset will not be able to think in this 21st century would happen such atrocities.
Now, if you don't mind me asking this question, Zima, what interest would these countries have so vested for them in the as you put it, oppression or of other people? What interest do they have, these countries that you've named, such as your Eritrea and Turkey and so on and so forth, in seeing what is happen?
I wish I knew the answer to that very good question. That's my question as well, that I don't understand. But Eritrea, as you might know, they've been in border conflict with Ethiopia since 1998, I believe. And it could be due to that, or even, as you know, if you were to go back, the Eritrean government, is known for inflicting conflicts in borders with Djibouti, Sudan, Yemen. It's not just Ethiopia the first time. It worries me why the international community is not doing to avoid further destruction in the Horn, as well as in the whole of Africa. There is a president who calls himself a president for about 30 years, not even elected one, not a formal government structure. I still don't understand why he's allowed to distract the Horn, and as a result of that, innocent lives are lost as we speak. It could be probably resources, or I don't know what motivates the other foreign countries that got involved, but I know for fact when Abiy Ahmed, the current prime minister of Ethiopia, got elected, they were
constantly visiting the Emirates, getting medals and so forth with his work together. You could see something was borrowing. And when Abiy Ahmed came to rule Ethiopia in his inauguration speech, wherever he got, he was mentioning about we were living in 27 years of darkness, even though Ethiopia is in its darkest moment in history as we speak at the current due to his in leadership, I believe.
Tell me, what do you make of the media coverage that has been afforded to what is happening in Tigray versus the kind of attention that was received by, for instance, a conflict in Ukraine? How do you draw these the dichotomies between these two?
Well, I would say it is the relevance, the news. The Western would always cover what's happening on their front door, rightly so, and the conflict in Ukraine war. As a result, it might have political or geolocation interest for the Western media. What surprises me is all the African media, instead of finding what's happening across their door or neighboring countries, for example, I feel so bad and my sympathy goes to the victims of the Durban flooding and in the KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. But you can see it wasn't reported as such as it should to the rest of the world to help those victims. And the same thing in Tigray, even though we tried to demonstrations, we were going to those African media, BBC Africa, CNN. You would say that CNN, they've done a lot of reports on this, even though the government of Ethiopia didn't give them the access. They tried. We've seen it. They've reported. In fact, they were the ones that they exposed all these atrocities by the federal government to the rest of the world. But I think as Africans, especially if we are going to live harmonious Africa in the future, it's very important to report what's happening around us, to spread awareness, regardless whether it happens in East Africa, West Africa, North or South, it doesn't matter, or Central Africa. It is us, the Africans, people, the media in Africa, should do all these hidden stories and take it to the rest of the world, including the African Union. It hurts that I still even don't understand why they haven't made a very concrete approach to solve this problem in Tigray. It's been almost 17 months now, but they barely have done any significant move to help the innocent lives lost in Tigray. So I would say it's to do with geolocation and political interest as well, the Western media that they have to report about what's happening in Russia or Ukraine. But clearly, you can see that our lives, if we don't look after ourselves for ourselves, no one else would care. We are the second interest in the rest of the world, as it seems.
Now, Zima, I want us to take a short break, but before we do that, I just want to get your reflections on the statement that was made recently by the WHO chief, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, who said that the world has a disproportionately higher attention span for wars that affect other races as opposed to those that affect black people. Your views on this?
Yeah, I'm sure Dr. Tedros Adhanom, the chief head of WHO, have his data to say that. He's a man of integrity and ever since, in fact, he's leading the WHO at its worst moment of pandemic, and I praise him for that. He's a mentor for everybody and a person in Africa to look for, and such an inspiration. And for him saying that honestly, bluntly, with research based, of course, to say that black lives are not equally treated as the rest of human race, shows that, for example, one example is that the worst conflict is happening in Tigray region in Ethiopia. However, the rest of the world are busy contemplating and reporting about what just happened in Ukraine. So you can clearly say the treatments are, like, they speak for themselves. If it comes toward the black lives in Tigray, it's just we are gravely concerned, words such as like it is so concerning, grave concerning, and words of like peepiness, something like that. They have never made any concrete action towards solving in poverty in third world countries, or it's just like feed people and then make it to the news, that's it. So you can clearly see the lives haven't been improved for the third world and poor countries. And I strongly believe, and I align myself with this statement made by Dr. Tedros Adhanom.
On the line, I'm joined by Zima. He's a Tigrayan citizen who's basically relaying the experience of the Tigrayan people of the conflict that has been going on since 2020 in their country. And you're listening to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa, where we continue to give you news, views, and interviews from an African perspective. We take a short break. We're back after this. Stay with us.
Africa, this is Pule Molebatsi, the host for the Albinism Report. Remember to tune into the show every Monday morning at 9:05 to 9:45 a.m. and again in the evening at 11:15 to 11 p.m. The Albinism Report, an enlightened narrative.
Africa of the future.
Welcome back to Africa of the Future here on Channel Africa. On the line, I'm joined by Zima, a Tigrayan citizen, who's joining us to give their reflections on a report that was given by the Human Rights Watch as well as Amnesty International on the character of the conflict over there. Now, Zima, welcome back. In November last year, the report of the Ethiopian Human Rights Commission, as well as the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, did not find that the ethnic cleansing had taken place in Western Tigray. Take us through what you think of this.
Clearly, the Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, they have indicated that even though they call it ethnic cleansing, I call it a genocide because it is written all over it, genocide. I still don't understand why they are scared to call it genocide, even though by the UN Convention for Genocide, all the definitions of a genocide are written all over it. If you were to go through it, it is a form of genocide by showing sexual violence, murder, and moving from place to place. But I would say the other reports by the human rights of the UN, it clearly shows that they might need to do more thorough investigations. But the current Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International report, they said they've done their research for a year, and the PDF, Tigray Defense Forces, they've been calling for international investigations to be done in a thorough thing. And this is not the first time. Amnesty International, back in 2020, February, it released a finding of human atrocities that happened in the region of Aksum in Tigray, which the Eritrean forces massacred in mass by just knocking out through doors. And then this is another form of ethnic cleansing that they said. Now we have another ethnic cleansing, they said. On March 2022, a human being was alive burned, as video were circulating on social media in Belshan Gungus in western Ethiopia. And at that moment, 11 Tigrayans were killed as well while this human being was burned to death. And if these forms of atrocities and crimes against humanity, which was supported by the federal government, soldiers and command members, is not a genocide, what it is, I still don't understand. So still a clear access is needed to do further investigation from individuals outside which have no connection with the country, so that the world would know the atrocities and learn a lot about the Tigray genocide. And I feel so let down by the international community for not doing their sworn work, especially by the United Nations, to stop the ongoing conflict, as well as it's like a slap on the face when they said, like, trucks have just got into Tigray with some food, while you have around by around estimated 4.6 million people are in need of urgent food assistance. Global citizens research released soon says like 900,000 people are living in famine conditions. 22,500 humanitarian trucks are needed, but so far until February there were only 1,200 trucks entered to Tigray, and I still don't understand why the WFP are not doing airdrops from higher altitude that they used to do in Syria or some other conflict areas on the planet. People are dying of famine, which is the result of the Tigray siege. And the UN was calling it de facto blockade. So if you announce that there is a problem, why don't you suggest a solution for it? Why is the word gravely concerned so preferable rather than taking actions to stop and protect innocent people from dying by a human-made war and famine?
Now, Zima, since ethnic cleansing isn't a recognized crime under international law, why is it important to describe the actions in Western Tigray as ethnic cleansing? Do you believe this the characterization needs to change, if at all?
Yes, of course. And the characterization of it, or if you were to read the whole report, which I had stop and read, because it's too graphic for me, and as I go through the report, the faces of my blood family are coming to me, and I don't know if one of them is still alive or not. I could be reading a report of my family's related to me, or people that somehow I'm related to have been massacred as such. And the naming of it would definitely elevate the concern of the world rather than anything, so that we will move on into a solution. It's not about this one is better calling it that one. It's all about resolving the solutions, and then the world would definitely pay attention to the word genocide, which it is a genocide. There is no other name for it, because, as I was mentioning earlier, ethnic cleansing is systematic forced removal of ethnic, racial, and religious groups from a given area. However, this is not just a removal. There was a killing. Even ethnic cleansing, they are trying to homogenize that area. That shows like whether it's a part of a society or ethnic groups or it's a few people, the form, the action that it was a very premeditated action done on the specific people, which are Tigrayans, that have been done. So I think it's very important to call a name. When my name is Zema and then you're calling me, for example, Hermias or Mohammed, I would not respond to it, because that's not my name. So if it is a genocide, call it a genocide. I still don't understand what is the hesitation. However, you can tell President Joe Biden even started to call the events in Ukraine a genocide. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Human Rights Watch or any other human rights are yet to comment or give their verdict. However, I'm not comparing that the Ukraine is less a victim of Tigray, but the situation in Tigray is 10 and 100 times more horrific than in Ukraine. It has never been told a story like that, in my opinion.
In the unlikely event that perhaps somebody who's listening to this program is hearing about this conflict for the very first time, and as a parting shot, Zima, what would you like the world to know about what is happening in Tigray?
Well, it's been 17 months. Imagine you are not in contact by any shape or form with your family members. You're not able to help them. Children, women, up to 120,000 women have been raped violently and kept as sexual slaves at parts and at times. And imagine that there is a famine, not natural for me, but a human-made famine, and then you're not able even, we're not even saying to the international community, as the Tigrayan diaspora, if we are getting access, we have the means. I would rather try to give everything that I have so that other people that I know whether they are my family or my neighbors would have a bread on their table, but the rest of the world, they're just not paying attention. As such, atrocity committers and genociders such as the Ethiopian prime minister and his allies are getting away with it. Why can't we stop it when we can? What's the point of regretting it? Oh, we should have stopped this, like what happened in Rwanda. And this is, by its forms, people are shouting and the rest of the world is not paying attention. The ones that they know about the conflict, they are just waiting for more death by the looks of it. And the international community, I urge them, everyone, to do in their power or even prayer that may Tigray heal or the conflict to end, so that we will get in touch with the survivors, if any. And I urge everyone else, especially people of Africa, especially the generation in the future, that we would like to live in harmony, the ones that we would like to watch football or any other forms of running activities or festival of music, whether it's in South Africa, Lesotho, or Gambia, or call it in Cairo, everywhere, in peace. We are capable of bringing peace. We are capable of leading each other without any interference. It's an insult to an African intelligence when we have war and then killing each other for a cause that was never part of any the people who are living in harmony together, but individualist leaders such as Abiy Ahmed, which I think he's incompetent, let alone in the country, even a small region. As such, we are in a mess. So the international community, especially the young African ones, the forces, they need to start questioning why is the African Union so quiet when things like this are happening? Why are they not vocal? Why are they not making, what's their power? What do they do? Why are they even as an institution there? If they can't resolve situation like this, why are they letting it happen for 17 months? Why are they saying, oh, this was law enforcement, when the government was saying this is law enforcement? Why do people have to die in the name of law enforcement when things can easily be done, solved on the table? Why can't we have a very civilized conversation on the table? Why are the African, the influencers, not doing their part, whether the conflict is in East Africa, in Tigray, or as I said, in Central Africa? What's the point of us celebrating International African Liberation Day when now we are allowing Turkey and other countries to invade us? Especially Tigray is known as the pride of the black people, as we've defeated the Italians in Adwa. This is the place where people are dying and bomb shelled by Turkish bombs and drones, and internally displaced people are even the targets. You could read it for yourself. You just need to go to through the hashtag on Twitter, Tigray genocide, or just type Tigray conflict. You will know, you will learn all about it. We are capable of resolving this once for all and live in harmony, and incompetent leaders should not be putting us in mess.
Absolutely, a poignant point for which to end. And thank you so much, Zima, for taking time to talk to us here on Africa of the Future.
Thank you for having me, and thank you.
Africa of the Future.
Africa of the Future.
And that is Zima, a Tigrayan citizen, joining us on the line to give us the story of the ordinary Tigrayans and how they are enduring the conflict that has been going there over there for 16 months. And that's how we come to the end of this week's edition of Africa of the Future. We'll be back next week with another installment of the show. Your Econ and Sport is up next. Until next time, my name is Luyanda Maume, and I'm out.
to run away and hide. Something happened in the middle of the night. If I came inside without a sound, suddenly my life was turning upside down. All that I could feel was pain, and strangers came and took my soul away. Like a deadly hurricane, I know my life will never be the same. Where do you go when you're by yourself? Who comes along when you cry for help? I know I can't change the past, but as the river keeps flowing, I'll keep on moving on. I'm hoping for a better life, praying that nobody's story turns out like mine. The only thing I know is fear, even those with good intentions disappear. All that I could feel was pain, and strangers came and took my soul away. Like a deadly hurricane, I know my life will never be the same. Where do you go when you're by yourself? Who comes along when you cry for help? I know I can't change the past, but as the river keeps flowing, I'll keep on moving on. Where do you go? Who comes along when you cry for help? I know I can't change the past, but as the river,